Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this July the 1st, 2005. Jonathan, the beginning of the second half of 2005.
We're here.
We made it.
Yep.
All the way.
It was waiting for us.
It was tough, but we almost didn't make it, but we made it. Anyway, we're glad you joined us. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The Earth is only about 6,000 years old, and I say only. I mean, 6,000 years is a long time when you can't even comprehend 1,000 years ago when the Vikings were going around beating up everybody, or 500 years ago when Columbus was looking for this place, even though the Indians already lived here.
Or 17 years ago when I was running around in my underwear watching cartoons.
Yep, there you go. I wonder if the Indians refer to this as the occupied territory.
Hmm.
The whole United States, you know. Interesting. Anyway, so we believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth.
It's the saddest.
And sad.
Yeah.
And has just evil consequences on this world. You know, it's tragic what's happened. So many hundreds of millions of deaths attributed to this dumb, dumb idea that somebody is superior to somebody else because of the color of their skin. Did you read the article, Jonathan, about Rwanda and the... the one we started reading yesterday from Creation Magazine was really good about the people, the Herero people, how they were executed because the white settlers in Africa thought they were inferior species. But the Herero population went from 80,000 down to 15,000, and they were just starving refugees is all that was left of the Herero population. One guy was, they were just killing them because they were black and they were inferior, according to the, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed German conquerors. One guy described the death of a Herero Christian leader. I'm reading page 54 here of Creation Magazine. Weak from disease and maltreatment, Kukuri was transported to his execution on the back of an ox cart. He did not show the slightest trace of fear, but instead looked as if he was going to a wedding. At one stage, he said to Meyer, "Pastor, like Elijah, I too travel to heaven in a wagon." When he arrived at the site, it was still being prepared. Meyer feared for Kukuru's tranquility and asked him to stop looking at the gallows. He replied, "Why should I not look at it? Is it not my cross?" The two of them prayed together that beautiful hymn, "So then, take my hand and lead me." Then Kukuri said, "It would appear that you still fear that I am afraid, but when my father calls his child, what does that child then go? Why does that child then fear to go to him? Give my wife my greetings and tell her that I have died in the faith of the Lord Jesus Christ. So, too, tell my children if you should ever see them." Then he said, "Lord Jesus, help me." Kukuru climbed the ladder, and the rope was put about his neck. As he was falling, the noose slipped so that he landed on the ground unconscious. Two soldiers lifted him up. On orders from the major in charge, shot him dead. Thus, Kukuru entered into the presence of his Lord. Why did they shoot him? Just because he was black and he was an inferior species. He hadn't evolved as far. The evolution theory is dangerous. Francis Galton was Charles Darwin's cousin. He visited Southwest Africa in the early 1850s. He went on to develop his theory of eugenics, a term he coined in 1883. I'm reading here again, page 54. This pseudoscience helped promote the racial superiority views, which played such a major role in the fate of the Herero people years later. Not only that, it goes on, how it ties directly into Otto von Bismarck and his belief that they should eliminate these inferior species, which is what happened in 1990 with the genocide of the Rwandan people. And, of course, in 1940 with the genocide of the Jewish people, because somebody believed in evolution, that stupid theory, and thought they were superior because to somebody else because of the color of their skin or because of their race or something like that.
I mean, for a great example, anybody can come by the office here and check out your pink version of the Mein Kampf. You got it highlighted all over the place.
Hitler.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the way Hitler viewed the Jews from a foreign culture, you know, or rather an ape, to the rest of the world actually ends up by thinking that they have an artist before them, while in truth it is only a pitiful comedian. You know, just going on, he said, talks about he is the remains of a typical parasite, as a parasite in the body of other nations, a parasite. He called them parasites. I mean, this is not, you know, and people say that, oh, Hitler thought he was doing, you know, God's work here, saying that he was eliminating the Jews. And I think, you know, with the two different competing ideas here, one, that Hitler was doing God's work by eliminating the Jews, and two, that Hitler thought he was speeding up evolution by killing the Jews, an inferior species, which one is more consistent? You know, if he was really doing God's work, then what he did should not conflict with the Bible. And there is absolutely no comparison whatsoever with what he did in the Bible. The Jews are supposed to be prayed for. They're supposed to be, you know, looked upon as God's chosen people. So there's no way God would tell him to kill the Jews. The only consistent option there is that Hitler was motivated and driven by this evolutionary, you know, idiocy to destroy these weaker races.
Yep, pretty sad. And it'll happen again. Pretty soon they're going to start branding the Christians as being inferior and persecute them for some reason.
Well, it's still all over the place. You've got these, you know, idiot KKK groups and stuff like that that think just because the color of someone's skin, they are inferior.
Right.
I told Pavel he's a tan all year round because he's from Ukraine. But
permanent tan.
Yeah, permanent tan. But I don't think Pavel's any inferior. He's got cooler stuff than me and probably beat me up, too.
Amen. Well, if you want to call in and be on the program, folks, we would welcome your participation. We are the folks who believe the Bible's true and evolution's dumb, and you can join us on the program by calling 850-479-3466, 850-479-DINO, or 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466.
And we've held that position unremorsefully or unwaveringly for the past, 2.5 years now on the air?
Yes, sir. Well, I've held it for nearly 30 years. 36 years I've been a Christian because a compromiser for the first few years,
mm-hmm.
believing in, gap theory. That's not a dumb idea. Or you can instant message us, AOL, instant message, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive.
And for people who actually want to do that, be sure that you send one well-thought-out message. Don't send half of it and then post another half and then post a question and then post another question asking why I haven't responded, because these go from me to Dr. Hoban. So one well-thought-out submission works best.
Because by the time you get the second half, there have been 12 in between, and we forgot what the first half was about.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. All right. Here we go. If you want to be on the program, join us. AOL, send a message, Dr. Dino Live, or call in 850-479-3466. Jonathan, I'm holding in my hand an article somebody printed out here from SportsIllustrated.com. Nope, I'm sorry, SportsIllustrated.CNN. .com from yesterday about in Thailand they caught a catfish that weighed 646 pounds. It shows two guys next to this thing that has got to be about 9 feet long. It's called the Mekong giant catfish, which shares the title of the largest freshwater fish with a close relative, the dog-eating catfish. What a name for a catfish. The dog-eating catfish.
I actually saw a dog eat catfish once.
Oh, yeah? I saw a man eating chicken at KFC just last week.
Man.
Yep. So this catfish is listed as critically endangered. Researchers indicate the numbers of this giant fish has fallen 80% in the last 13 years. So save the catfish. Let the people starve, but save the catfish, whatever you do. Okay. Anyway, it's 646-pound catfish. Did you see a picture of it, Jonathan?
I've seen one before. Those things could feed a village for months. They're
huge. Right. Well, that's what it did, too. They ate it. Okay. Good, good, good. Anyway, interesting. You know, there's all kinds of strange things out there that people, the whole study of these rarely seen animals is called cryptozoology, the study of hidden animals or unusual animals. I spoke at the cryptozoology conference just a couple weeks ago in Conroe, Texas, and had a great time over there with those folks. So a lot of them are Bigfoot researchers and stuff like that. They told some just unbelievable stories of Bigfoot sightings in East Texas, in Southeast Texas. Could not believe some of the stuff they were saying. These guys, look, we were there, you know, and I've got video footage right here in my hand of some of the stuff that they had there. So I don't know about Bigfoot, but I think I know about dinosaurs. I believe since there have been 20,000 reported sightings in the last few hundred years, it fits right in to God's word saying everything was created in 6 days. Nothing died until Adam sinned. Man brought death into the world.
6 literal days.
Yep. Evolution says death brought man into the world. Death is the hero of the plot, and time is the god of the evolution theory. I over and over and over, I'll ask them questions. Now, how could this happen? And they'll say, well, given enough time, always call on their god. And they get mad at the Christians, you know, so how did the world come here? So, well, God created it. Oh, yeah, you're calling on God, that's not science. Well, they call on time, and that's not science either. both evolution and creation are religious, but we admit ours is religious, and they don't admit theirs is religious. Oh, well. Okay, we'll keep that. Gives us job security, Jonathan. We'll be here for a long time. Yesterday, I did not get to finish. Tucker Brahm had written and said, my friend has a question on how the books of the Bible were chosen. She also wanted to know why there were not any others added. Boy, Tucker, that's called the canonicity of the Bible. That's certainly not my field of expertise, though I have studied it and read it 30-some years ago when I was in Bible college, taking a theology course on that topic. And I don't recall all the details. I've got a theology book, Systematic Theology. You can go through that. But you might want to check out Bible Believers' website, BibleBelievers.com or KJV1611. What is Bible Believers Baptist or Bible Baptist Church, Jonathan? You remember their website? Is it?
It's something like that.
1611, KJV1611.com or
.org, I think.
Yeah, try that. They have a whole book just on that topic of how did we get this book. Okay, and I would disagree with them on numerous other topics. Some of the crazy things they believe, I do not believe. But anyway, hope that helps. They have some really, really good stuff on that topic. So, all right, let me go back to today's messages now. That's yesterday's. Here's one from Ghost 32, who I met in Flint, Michigan here last week. He says, concerning yesterday's topic, I think I understand where people are getting confused on the free will concept. They are thrown off by the idea that God created us and knew we would fail, but created us anyway. They think that means he created the failure within us. But this is just not so. He had a choice to either fix us so we can't sin, thereby taking away free will and making us a fraud, or he could make us anyway, including the free will, and knowing the result would be the sin we would commit. Well, that's a good point. There's no connection between God knowing in advance and God controlling everything. That, I don't think the callers yesterday ever caught that message. Did they, Jonathan?
I really don't think so. I think they want to kind of shift the blame off of, you know, for instance, in the analogy we had with the rapist and the woman, the rapist raping this woman and God knowing it's going to happen but not doing anything. If God intervenes, then he's going to be taking away their free will. If he doesn't, then he's going to be allowing them to have their free will. So either way, I mean, it's almost like a paradox or something. You can't get around that. God is going to allow things to happen because, one, he gave us free will, and he wants us to genuinely come to him. I mean, if he wanted us all to be saved, then he could just snap his fingers and say, you're all saved. Now get ready to die and come visit me. But it's got to be something genuine there. So,
well, here's the other side of the coin. See, God already told us what to do. You know, when a person commits certain crimes, such as rape, execute them. So if a woman is raped, and that's our society's fault for allowing these people to live, okay, that's not God's fault. He told us what to do. It's real simple, you know, obey his word, and it's wonderful, you know, if we just would obey his book. And the poor lady yesterday, today, a lady called in. I did a program this morning, a two-hour radio program. This lady called in and said, do you know in the Old Testament it says you should stone your children if they don't obey? I said, yes, ma'am, I'm aware of that. She said, that's terrible, that's horrible. I said, wait. Now, suppose, we did that. That was a command for God to say, if your child will not obey, you try and try and try. You take him to the elders and say, this is my child, he will not obey, and the elders make the decision if he should be stoned. Now, there are no instances in the Bible of this ever happening. None. And it probably never happened. But just the threat that it could happen was enough of a deterrent to make the average parent be able to say to their kids, son, if you keep it up, we're going to see the elders. Oh, no. You know, it's kind of like you tell the kid in the school, hey, we're going to see the principal. Well, that is a deterrent for a large percentage of the kids. I don't want to go see the principal. No. But, man, if it was going to be stoned, that would stop most of it. So, we don't know if they ever did it, but the poor lady this morning was all bent out of shape trying to say God is mean.
Look at the hypocrisy, too. I mean, here they are complaining about a rule that was, you know, to stone disobedient children, and yet they have absolutely no argument against, you know, cutting the feeding tube on a paralyzed woman. You know, on a... what is this? Oh, well, your Bible says to stone children. You know, and then here we are with this opportunity to voice our opinions about this woman who's obviously, you know, still capable of a lot of, I guess, regeneration and very complicated, and they have no problem killing her.
Quarterback. We'll be back, folks. Get your questions in. Dr. Dino live. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Would you invite a total stranger into your house to play alone with your children?
Hi, kiddies.
Of course not. So why leave your defenseless children exposed to the perversion on the internet? Protect your family with Lifeline's filtered internet access. Do you want to speed up your dial-up connection and have the benefit of filtering as well? Use Lifeline's Browse Blast Filtered Web Accelerator, the only one on the market today. With Lifeline's filtered internet and Browse Blast Web Accelerator, you get the fastest connections, and Lifeline gives 10% of your monthly bill to your favorite ministry. Lifeline's accelerated service speeds up your connection almost 6 times that of normal dial-up. Filtered internet access costs as little as $9.95 per month. If you're happy with your current provider, or you just want to keep your email address, no problem. Get Browse Blast for just $5.95 per month. To sign up for Lifeline Internet or Browse Blast, call 1-800-511-4275. That's 1-800-511-4275.
Phone 800-311-2418, toll free. And your order will help support TruthRadio.com.
In the job hunt, there's a fine line between desperation and determination. You're determined to find a job meeting all your needs and using your talents. Yet you may become desperate with a family to support and bills coming due. When faced with this dilemma, think of Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all his ways, acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. Inner Crystal can assist you in your search. Head to InnerCrystal.com and see how. Inner Crystal is a Crystal ministry.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Tell your friends that we are on for 90 minutes now. Get the chance to call in, get their questions answered. We may have to go even longer one of these days, but today is July 1st, 2005. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson telling you that the Bible is true and evolution is dumb, real, capital D, dumb, and dangerous, extremely dangerous. So, Jonathan, you want to get your ICR article there? And I got a bunch of emails here I can talk about.
Yeah, I got one right here. Actually, a lot of people out there are familiar with the RAIT project that ICR put on just recently. Actually, it's still going right now. They're expecting results in mid-2005. And the RAIT basically is an acronym for Radioisotopes and Age of the Earth. And their whole perspective was to study the whole radioactivity subject, to study radiometric dating and give a very thorough analysis and outpouring of information from it, which they're doing a fantastic job on. Their next project here is the genome research. They're going to be checking out the human and chimpanzee genomes, or pantroglodytes, I believe is the name here for chimpanzees, the pantroglodytes. And they're going to be comparing them, and already their research is indicating that with all the new information in, you know, the traditional historical perspective was that humans and chimpanzees are about 98% similar, down to 95% similar whenever they included the indels. And now they're saying that as more information comes in, as these genomes are being completely sequenced, it's looking more in the realms of 90%. And later on, it might be even less. So they're going through, you know, you can check out the latest impact article, number 385, for Daniel Criswell, Dr. Daniel Criswell, who is a professor, let's see, of molecular biology, and biology at the ICR Graduate School. They can check out his latest writing in the impact articles, number 385, for the latest on that and for some very awesome information about this large project that's coming up. And if they want to contribute to that, I'm sure they could, and that would be very fruitful, I think.
All right.
So,
you know, I've done 92 debates now at universities and would love to do 10 more this month. I'll do one today if somebody wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they always bring up, almost always bring up in the debates, and we've had callers call in and say, well, humans and chimpanzees are only 1.6% different.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first place, it's not true. Okay. Secondly, it wouldn't matter. Barney Maddox, the leading genome researcher, said, and I'm quoting from Human Genome Project, Quantitative Disproof of Evolution. Let's see. Dr. Barney Maddox, the leading genome researcher, said, concerning these differences, genetic differences, the genetic difference between the human and his nearest relative, the chimpanzee, is at least 1.6%. That doesn't sound like much, but calculated out, that's a gap of at least 48 million nucleotides. And a change of only 3 nucleotides is fatal to an animal. There is no possibility of change. That's what he said about it. Then in Washington Post, September 30th of 2002, Washington Post, September 30, 2002, on page A7, they said, oops, folks, guess what? We thought it was 98.5% similar. Actually, it's 95% similar. We just found 3 times more differences than we had before. And then Nature magazine, May 27th of 2004, a year ago, they said, oops, it's 7.7% difference. And now they think it's going to go to 10%.
Well, that's because when they first gave out that 98%, you know, flabbergasted answer there, that they didn't have hardly any of this stuff sequenced. They were just going with small fractions. It's just like if you took, you know, one page from two different books, you know, page 15 from two different books, the results of comparisons done on that, how many homologous characters there are, isn't really a good representation of the entire book as a whole, because you don't have the rest of it. You're just comparing two small pieces there. And, I mean, you could do that with practically any creature. Check out different proteins, and I mean, that you may see some similarities there between almost anything. They were saying whenever they included the indels, which are just, you know, areas with zero sequence homology, which is what they said in here, that's what increased it up to 95%. And preliminary research ICR is saying they're expecting it to be less than 90%. So
there you go. But even still, suppose it was 100% similarity. We're still obviously very different. Maybe what they're comparing is not where the differences lie, you know.
And we still don't even know everything. I mean, you look at just recently there was that plant, Eridopsis thaliana, that was able to carry a trait over multiple generations that did not show up in transitional generations. And it completely blew their mind. It's not what they were expecting to find with the work that Gregor Mendel was doing. You know, something is happening that we didn't know about. You know, something that we have very little understanding about. I don't know if they figured it out, if it was a plasmid or what, but it violated the common idea of Mendelian genetics. And so we're still learning, first of all. I mean, we have a pretty good understanding of a lot of the stuff, but it is a large field, and, you know, it's only like, 30 years old or something. It's still a baby science.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very awesome. I love it.
Well, good. All right, let's get some of your questions here. As far as free will, I don't want to spend the whole program on that, but, I can do exactly what I want. Now, God knows what I'm going to choose, but he's not controlling it. I'm in control, and I want very badly for my will to be blended and molded with his will. Some people don't want that. That's why they believe this evolution theory for the most part. They don't want God telling them what to do. Are you kidding? He might tell them they can't do some things they like to do.
I mean, look at it. If we didn't have free will, you know, you see evolutionists always quote that, I think, therefore I am. You know, if you didn't have free will, that should be something more like, I think, therefore I'm still not sure. You know, maybe God's making me think all these things. Is he making me think this? You know, am I really even thinking anything? Maybe I'm sleeping or swimming in a pool somewhere. I think, therefore I'm thinking. I'm confused.
They are confused.
Where would you go with that?
I go to bed. I forget it.
So you think?
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're not really sure, though.
Well, you can't be if you have no free will and God's just tickling your brain there.
All right. Ghost 32 goes on to say, but if we were given the option, then when we choose to follow him, it would be genuine. No one feels fulfilled by the love given by a robot, especially not God. So instead, he decided to go ahead and create us and include the free will, and he went a step further by making himself available to us and forgive us and even become one of us to be the best help he could be without violating our free will. Very well said. Ghost, love it. Okay, thank you, sir. If you want to get your message in here, go to AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Or you can call in at 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, or go to extension 136. But somebody may answer the phone. They're over there for a few more minutes. Or 877-479-DINO. Here we go. Work equals B B-A-D. Work equals bad. Oh, Glenda, thank you so much. Wonderful secretary. Here we go. Okay, bye, Glenda. You're on the radio now. Here we go.
Everyone got to see our youthful blonde secretary.
Our youthful blonde secretary.
Yep. With her friend today.
With a friend. Brought a friend today. Okay. Some
single youthful blonde. That's what she just told me to throw that in there. So
going single.
Yeah.
Looking for rich, 60-plus.
Single blonde.
Doesn't need to be blonde. Just single.
You have blue eyes.
Man.
Yep. Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Oh, perfect.
We've got Mein Kampf over here on the table. We can just get a picture of you holding that book later on.
Superior race. Bye, Glenda. Here we go. Work equals bad, whatever that means. Hello, Dr. Ovin. My name is John, and I have a question about tattoos and their relationship to Romans 7:6 and Romans 8:2. Are tattoos sin? And if so, what about Christian tattoos? Thank you, my family, and I love your program. We're all doing and all you're doing for the Lord. I don't have Romans 7:6 in front of me, but I have a Bible next to me here. Take me a minute to find out. I certainly do not think I think it's more of a dumb idea than a sinful idea. The body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. It belongs to God, and he said pretty clearly, in Leviticus, don't make any marks on your skin. But, man, many people don't know, and they do it anyway. And, I don't know, Jonathan, you got an opinion on that?
It's kind of a personal opinion. It's not exactly what would be the ministry position, though.
Well, we have probably 7 people on staff here that have tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't say, oh, you can't come work here because of that. My father, I believe, just had one tattoo. He was in the Marines.
Which another one of our guys, the other John, the very artistic one, awesome guy, was in the Marines and has a tattoo.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Romans 7:6. But now we are delivered from the law, that being dead, wherein we were held, that we should serve in newness of spirit and not in oldness of the letter. Okay, he says, contrast that with Romans 8:2. For the law of the Spirit of life in Jesus Christ hath made me free from the law of sin and death. I'm assuming here he's referring to the Old Testament law of Leviticus about don't make any marks in your flesh. That is, I suppose, something you have to decide between you and the Lord, what he would want. My body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, belongs to God, and since he said that in the Old Testament, he must have some reason for, feeling that way about it. So, why take a chance? Not the end of the world. I wouldn't do it. I'm not throwing a chance. We'll be back, folks, after the break. Get your questions in to Dr. Dino Live.
Can your children take no for an answer?
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
Barb and I are often bombarded by our children when they're trying to persuade us to say yes when we've already said no. If they don't get their way the first time, they'll come back and try a second, a third, yes, and even a fourth pass. And if they don't get their way with their superior logic, they'll try to wear us down emotionally. What is there about the word no that they don't understand? It may be that your child argues with you because you've trained him to argue. If he knows he can wear you down with his request, he'll do it. Ask yourself some questions. On what occasions do your children test your authority? What tactics do they usually employ? Today, pray that God will strengthen you as a parent to say no when you need to, while communicating to your children that that same word also means, I love you.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
listening to Truth Radio. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California. That's Post Office Box 344, N-I-P-O-M-O, Nipomo, California, 93444. Write to us. Let me ask you, would you go to a fast food restaurant for filet mignon and lobster? Then why do you bother going to a politician for a solution to your problems based upon morality? Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I read that in a letter to the editor, and I think it was worth passing on. And I would like to challenge your thinking to spend less time pleading with your congresspeople and more time getting people, your friends and others, to listen to Truth Radio. We need to build the audience for Truth Radio, and you can help through your emails, a brief reference to Truth Radio, through your conversations with friends, handing out little cards with Truth Radio mentioned. We appreciate all the help you can give. Thank you for listening, and bring along others with you.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. We now have 1 hour left, and you can still get your questions in. This is Kent Hovind, H-O-V-I-N-D. You type that in Google, and your computer will melt down. There are a bunch of folks that don't like me, Jonathan.
There's a bunch of folks that absolutely love you, though.
Well, that's true, but it doesn't matter either way. I just want the Lord to be happy.
Yeah.
And if he is, and if nobody else is, oh, well. And if everybody is, oh, well. You know, doesn't matter. We're not in a popularity contest at all. I decided my sophomore year in high school, when I got saved, gave my heart to the Lord, I said, Lord, I can't give you much, but I can give you my loyalty. I'll try to do what your book says, okay? In my dating life, I'll try it. In my school life, I'll try it. Be a good brother, be a good son. And I prayed, you know, thousands of times, Lord, help me to be a son that my dad will be proud of. And I tried to have a good relationship with my parents. And when I got to dating, I double dated quite frequently with my parents. Some people thought that was nuts. Said, well, first, I have nothing to hide, okay? I'm not doing anything I don't want my parents there for. Actually, quite the opposite. I want my parents to know what I'm doing. Number two, Dad has a much nicer car than my old beat-up Volkswagen. Number three, Dad has a much thicker wallet than I have, okay? So it was really, really nice double dating with my parents or the girl's parents. Because, you know, when you marry them, you end up marrying the whole family. I mean, you're going to spend the next 40 years going to visit the in-laws, so better be somebody you really, really enjoy being with, because that comes with the package. And then, you know, got married after my junior year in college, and 32 years coming up July 14th, 13 days. Oh, by the way, Jonathan, my wife has been in Houston with my son-in-law, Paul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She called about 2 hours ago and said, the doctor says you can go home for 4 days. So they're driving home from Houston right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So they'll be here somewhere around 3 in the morning, 2 or 3 in the morning from Houston, Texas. That'll be exciting. Anyway, so my daughter Marlissa and her husband Paul, Paul's been in MD Anderson Hospital for, 4 weeks now, I guess. Real serious cancer. But he's doing better. So pray for Paul. Okay, let's see. We're doing your questions here. Oh, we're talking about tattoos. I said, I don't think it's wise. I don't think it's real evil sin. I just don't think it's unnecessary, and generally is going to be a drawback, I think, to a Christian testimony. Here's one way to look at it. When I was lifeguard and had long blonde hair, and I got saved, and I read the Bible, 1 Corinthians, you know, it's a shame for man to have long hair. I went and got a haircut because I felt like the Bible taught, you know, men should not have long hair. The position of having short hair, a haircut like I have, is not offensive to anybody. I can go knock on any door in the world and talk to them about the Lord, and they might get mad at me because of what I believe or some reason, but they will never get mad at me. I won't turn anybody off because of my haircut. And same thing with tattoos, I guess. A certain percentage of the population will psychologically shut you out and say, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk to you about the Lord. Same thing if you walk up to somebody and you're smoking a cigarette. Hey, let's talk about the Lord. Well, I don't think I could prove from Scripture that, you know, thou shalt not smoke cigarettes, you know. I think the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and it's pretty obvious they harm the body, but so does overeating. You know, D.L. Moody was huge, like over 300 pounds, and Charles Haddon Spurgeon smoked cigars. They were both very famous preachers in their time, early 1900s. And Moody walked up to Spurgeon one day and said, Spurgeon, when are you going to quit smoking them cigars? That's a bad testimony. Spurgeon poked him in his big fat belly and said, when you get rid of your big belly, I'll quit smoking these cigars. Well, they're both right, okay? Both of them should quit. So I guess you look at some things like, is what I'm going to do going to help spread the gospel or hinder spreading the gospel? If somebody's offended because of my dress or my haircut or because of a tattoo, don't do it, okay? You could. You probably have the liberty to, but just I don't think it's going to be a hindrance to it. If it alienates 10% of the population or 5% of the population, well, then don't do it. Anyway, that's my thought. Okay. Jake Mabob writes in, and by the way, you can get your questions in here. Get them in quick at 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message us, AOL Instant Message, which is America Online, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Okay, Jonathan, it says my Dr. Dino's live warning level is 0%. Is that something I need to be worried about?
No,
or that...
just go ahead and close that down.
That's good, huh? I want a 0% warning level?
Yep.
You're doing fine. Because all my emails, instant messages come from you, right?
They sure do.
And we can trust you.
Yep.
Okay. Some of the people out there, now you have to filter them through your computer, though, right?
Yeah, but there's no problems with these.
No problem. You're secure over there.
Yep.
You got all kinds of firewalls and jails and everything else.
He built it in.
And the guys who try to hack the system, we capture them, and it destroys their system, right? Their screen explodes and everything?
We can say that. That definitely happened.
Ah, okay.
I don't know how truthful it is, but if that deters any type of hacking, sure.
Okay, sure. Here we go. Jake Mabob writes, Hi, Dr. Oven. I attended the University of Michigan, Flint. Jake Mabob, I'm sorry to hear about that.
Okay.
I had to read the book Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond for a geography class. It was interesting to find that Mr. Diamond acknowledged that carbon dating is inaccurate. But then he countered that statement by claiming dates could be inferred by taking averages from growth rings in trees. Could you expand on what you know about this obvious trick? Thanks, Jake. Yes, Jake, tree ring dating is a far cry from an exact science, okay? Carbon dating trees, the oldest ones we have go back about 4,000 years, and carbon dating those does not give precise results. And tree ring dating is not an exact science either. Somebody asked this question in a seminar years ago, and I flashed up on the screen a picture of a tree, you know, cut in half showing the rings. And we've got a whole bunch of samples of these right here in our museum. I bet Al Gore would be upset if he came and saw these trees, Jonathan. These, you know, slabs we have of every kind of tree. He'd be mad. Tough. Anyway, and so I showed how that tree ring dating is not a precise science. It's, you know, it's a good estimate, but trees can produce more than one ring a year. During Q&A time, this old man came up to the microphone. He said, Mr. Hovind, I am a professional wood carver. I make walking sticks. Have you ever seen those walking sticks you can buy at the mall, Jonathan? They cost like $100, you know, and they got carvings all over them and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they're not even like cotton candy flavored or anything.
No. Well, this guy makes these walking sticks personalized, carved, real fancy walking sticks for people. I guess people who need a walking stick or like to carry a stick around or just stick around or have a stick up, whatever. But this guy said, Mr. Hovind, I've been carving and doing walking sticks for about, I think he said 50 years. It was a long time. He said, I plant my own trees, I raise them, I cut them down, I know exactly how old they are because I planted it. He said, I can tell you, after 50 years of experience, I plant trees, wait 7 years, cut them down to make the walking stick. They always have at least 11 rings. He said, I've never seen one with less than 11 rings in 7 years. I thought, well, that's kind of strange. But it's interesting. I don't know if trees continue that thing. But the rings are not necessarily summer, winter. The rings are growing season, you know, non-growing season. You might get a good spring rain and then get a good fall rain, and you have two sets of rings for that year. So it is not correct to say the tree-ringed aging, you know, gives the exact age of the tree. The oldest living tree is the bristlecone pine, called the Methuselah tree, in Southern California. If you've ever seen the way a bristlecone pine grows, it is a tangled-up mess. So it is extremely difficult. You don't just cut it down and count the rings, because it's not a circle, okay? It's a real gnarled mess. So it is quite a few things have to be estimated to even then figure the age of the tree. But what they typically do, they drill a real tiny hole about the size of the lead of a pencil. They actually have a drill bit that is hollow on the inside, a coring bit, they call it. So they drill into the tree and pull out a core sample, and then with a microscope, they count the rings in the core sample. And it is, as I said, a very tangled up mess. We've got some bristlecone pine in our museum. We have some bristlecone pine jewelry boxes for sale. They're like $50, you know, out of 400-year-old bristlecone pine logs. But you can buy one of those if you'd like. Call our bookstore. Anyway, our tree is probably 30-inch diameter that we have, the log we have in our museum, and it has 700 rings. So the oldest living tree has 4,700 rings. And the Bible says there was a flood about 4,400 years ago. So we have 300 more rings than we have time for the flood. Well, that leaves several options. Number one, the tree survived the flood, which, of course, is possible. The whole world wasn't underwater for the whole time. You know, Noah was in the ark for 12 and a half months. That does not mean the world was submerged for 12 and a half months. Some areas might have only been underwater for a week or two, and a tree could survive that with no problem. Number two, the tree floated around and then rerouted after the flood. That's option. Number three, it has 4,700 rings, but it grew more than one ring a year, which is, we know, happens to trees, okay? So still, I'll stick with my guns and say the biblical date of a flood about 4,400 years ago is not disproven by the tree ring. Then they'll go through overlapping dating. They take a log, and it's got certain types of ring patterns. It's got five or six good rings in a row, and then five or six, you know, small rings, and five or six good rings, et cetera. Then they find another log 100 miles away in an Indian, you know, ruins, and compare the rings and find they can overlap the rings and get a match. So, oh, wow, look at this. This is, we can extend the date further back with overlapping tree ring dating. Well, duh, some real obvious assumptions there. Two trees can grow side by side and have different tree ring growth patterns. They can be right next to each other, and if one's bigger than the other, the big one gets the sunlight, the little one doesn't. So they have different growth patterns with one growing right under the other one. When the big one dies, now the little one gets the sunlight, and so it's going to get better growth pattern. Two trees can grow on opposite sides of the very same mountain and have very different growth patterns because, you know, of the called the rain shadow. As wind blows up the mountain, it drops the rain. When it comes down the mountain, it absorbs the moisture and it's dry. You see that phenomena well expressed in the state of Washington. The west coast is very wet. The east coast is very dry. East side of Washington is very, very dry. So, it's just not a good science to really. I certainly wouldn't reject the Bible based on such a questionable science as tree ring dating. Hope that helps, Jake. Okay, here we go. Guess who? 100? No. Guess who? F00. Screen name here. Let's see. Who do you think a skater kid would be more comfortable talking to? A fellow skater who claims Christ is the way, truth, and light? Or some slick-haired, suited man with a nice button-down shirt? I don't know any people that slick their hair down like that anymore, but I suppose there are some. Who is the audience? That is what needs to be asked. It may have been a shame for man to have long hair in 20 A.D., but it was a shame for women to wear pants at that time, too. Shames change. Today, the culture here in Iowa isn't affected by cowboy boots and Carhartt jackets. But down where you are, long-haired surfer dudes will not open up to a cowboy hat Carhartt man. Tattoos, long hair, they open you up to certain unreachable audiences. audiences that a suit and tie keep you away from. Who does God want you to reach specifically? Your tattoo employees can probably talk to certain people that your non-tattoo employees can't. Well, first place here, nobody's an employee. Everybody's a missionary. They work for the Lord. They just happen to be serving here, assisting our ministry. Nobody's an employee. But I understand your point. I have never had anybody, and I've witnessed to people with tattoos all over their body and pierced everything you can imagine and probably some things you can't imagine pierced, and they've never mentioned or never even indicated they were offended by my lack of tattoos or piercings. Okay? I have one ring, my wedding ring, no piercings, no tattoos, and nobody's ever been offended that I'm aware of because of that. So I understand. You know, I spoke at I've spoken at churches where the pastor has hair down to his waist, you know, and tattoos all over his body. There's a group that came here and set up a booth at our boot camp a few months ago that nearly all of them have tattoos and piercings, and that's the way they minister. Their website is youcanrunbutyoucannothide.com. And they're great Christians, love the Lord, wouldn't question it for a second. And you're probably right. There may be a group that they can reach better than I can. I don't know that that's true, but I sure reach an awful lot of folks with my way. Anyway, so if you're saying that as a justification for therefore doing those things, I don't know that the long hair on men being a shame 2,000 years ago, how that would change necessarily. The reason it was a shame, because the long hair was a sign of a person in the Old Testament, anyway, of a Nazirite, which was a person who took a vow and said, God, I'm going to do something for you, and until I do, you can read Numbers chapter 6, until I fulfill my vow, I'm not going to cut my hair, I'm not going to eat anything that comes from a grape, grape juice, grape jelly, grape syrup, wine, all this stuff. I'm not going to touch a dead person, even if my sister dies or brother dies, I won't touch them. They got to take them to the grave without me weeping over them and touching them. So there's a lot of regulations for the vow of the Nazirite in the Numbers chapter 6. So if a person had long hair in Hebrew times, in Bible times, it was a sign they had a vow and hadn't done it yet. They were ashamed of it. People would see them and say, oh, what did you promise God? Oh, you didn't do it yet, did you? And so they knew it was a shame. And so we know Jesus did not have long hair because Judas would have not had to kiss him to identify him from the crowd, number one. He said, I'll go kiss the guy, pick him out of the crowd. Several times he blended right in with the crowd. They couldn't even find him. He looked like everybody else. And if you look at the pictures of the day, the coins of the day, for instance, images of that day show men with short cropped hair. That was standard procedure. Plus you have the scripture saying it's a shame to have, for men to have long hair. I didn't say it's a sin. I just think it's a shame. It was then. I still think it is today. That's my personal unbiased opinion. And again, my haircut doesn't offend anybody that I know of. All right, Jonathan, what do you do with long hair?
What do I do with? I don't know. I can kind of see the point, I guess, from both ends there. I don't know. I know, for instance, not a long hair situation, but with the tattoos, I was able to witness to a bunch of college students because of one of my tattoos. It opened up a door. But I can see how it, I do kind of regret getting one on my forearm because now I carry that around to all audiences, even the older folks or, some of the adults who think that tattooed children are rebels and outlaws and they don't even want to give a second to talk to them. So I can see how I offend them. And, at the same time, we have people or groups like You Can Run But You Can't Hide who get into public schools all over the United States and reach, I don't know how many, millions of students because, they look like what the world has no problem with.
Right.
It's kind of like a, I don't know if it'd be like, those little plastic, or not plastic, like inflatable army tanks or something. They don't look like a threat. But they're carrying a punch that will knock you out, the word of Christ. They're bringing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know, a difficult subject.
Well, some things are worth parting company over, and some things are not. And I would put those items, tattoos, long hair, in my camp anyway. It's not worth parting company. I have some very good friends who love the Lord as much as I do.
Mm-hmm.
They do those things. I don't question their love for the Lord or their loyalty or their, anything. I prefer not, okay?
I can see, for instance, whenever John came out of the wilderness, the Pharisees that day may have been kind of unacceptable of him because he was kind of a ratty guy, had camel's clothing and ate locusts and stuff like that. He said, "I don't mean to listen to that guy. He's a rat. Nobody.
Yeah.
But had a good
sense. We'll be back, folks. Get your questions into Dr. Dino Live. Back in 1 minute.
If you've always wanted to understand a little bit more about law, but not make a deep study of it enough that you would get a degree or be admitted to the bar, but you'd still like to know just a little bit more than you have earlier learned, here's the perfect solution for you. We have received a number of copies of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. This booklet is written by Howard Fisher and Dale Pond. If you'd like a copy, this just under 30 pages will really give you a practical grasp of what the common law is and how it fits into your daily affairs as it relates to courts and jurisprudence. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. No price, just donate to Truth Radio. We'll send it to you. Thanks. Looking forward to hearing from you soon.
Just you, your shovel, and the promise of buried treasure. How far would you dig? Would you dig 6 feet down for $1,000? What about $10,000? $10 million? What if the treasure was priceless? Lots of folks are missing out on the treasure of the Scriptures. They lack confidence and a few vital tools. The good news is, there's good news at BibleDiscovery.org. Finding real treasure doesn't take the sweat off your brow, just the click of your browser. At BibleDiscovery.org, you'll find the tools you need to really understand the Bible. Self-paced lessons, flexible plans, plain English questions and answers. You'll find it all at BibleDiscovery.org. Even a free sample lesson. Go to BibleDiscovery.org and start digging. BibleDiscovery.org. Your treasure is waiting.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hopin and Jonathan Sampson talking to you live this July the 1st, 2005. And you're welcome to call in and be on the program at 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466. We believe the Bible is true and evolution theory is dumb and dangerous. Okay, Jonathan, who's on the phone there?
We've gotten Jared on the phone.
Jared, welcome to the program again. You need to get your own program, you know.
Yeah, I'm actually going to try to do that later this year if possible.
Okay. Good. How can I help you, Jared?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to know, what is the reference for this Barney Maddox quote? Because I can't find it on the Internet.
Oh, let's see. I've seen it quoted in a couple of books. There's a book that we sell called Doubts About Darwin, Not After This. I know it's quoted in there. I don't have the book in front of me, or I could look up the original source, but I know it's stated in there.
Yeah. I want the original source because I couldn't find it. At all.
Yeah.
I went to the Human Genome Project, and I looked for Maddox and Barney Maddox, and I couldn't find him.
Okay.
Then you say he's the leading genome researcher.
That was information, as I said. I've seen it twice. Doubts About Darwin, Not After This. But Doubts About...
Yeah, Doubts About Creation, Not After This. Yeah, we don't sell books that encourage people to trust Darwin.
Okay. Also, it was CEM Technical Journal. What is that? If I recall the reference. Okay, I don't want to put my finger on it real quickly, but I'll see if I can work on that for you.
Okay.
Okay, now...
Yes?
Is it true, though, that the genetic difference between humans and chimps is growing the more we learn about the DNA?
I don't think so. I think people are getting more sophisticated in the way that they compare things. it brings up a very interesting question about how do you compare two sets of data that don't have the same length?
Correct. If we were to compare Darwin's book, for instance, with Genesis chapter 1, they don't have the same length. Genesis 1 is considerably shorter.
Right.
Even the whole book of Genesis is shorter than Darwin's book. So how do you compare? If we were to compare, for instance, the number of times that each book uses the letter E, or a particular word like the, we could get a percentage and say, okay, out of X number of thousand words, you know, 7% of the time the letter E is used.
Yeah, okay? But that's not the kind of comparison they're doing when they compare genomes.
And what kind of comparison are they doing?
Direct comparison.
Well, that would be a direct comparison of how many times they use the letter E.
No. I'm talking about you take two sets of data and you tell how much of the data is exactly in common. So if this number, this percentage, is changing the more that we look at it, I would suspect that the difference is due to genes. For instance, if you look at the number of genes we have in common, even if you're right that 90% of the genes are in common and 10% aren't, I'd be willing to bet those 10% that aren't in common are very, very similar, and that the differences are due to the mutations. So how exactly would you characterize the difference?
Well, you're a mathematician. Could we take two mathematical formulas that are long, convoluted, and complicated that only have 1% difference in the formula, or in the equation, I should say, and give a very different outcome on the answer?
Oh, of course, but there's a huge difference between two mathematical formulas and the genomes of two different species.
Well, you might want to check out, actually, this article by this geneticist, Daniel Griswell, PhD geneticist, and he's actually explaining what would be the implications of a 95% difference as opposed to a 90% difference or less.
Where's that article at, Jonathan?
That's the Impact article, the latest one, 385, on ICR.org. So he's actually explaining it's not that would not be a little deal, even if it was just 10% of protein similarities. Because that's what they used to think it was 98%. They were not including indels. They were not, you know, for instance, they also just want to measure protein coding, you know, genes like that.
You also have to consider there's a real high probability that anybody doing research on the human genome, in order to get grant money, they have to somehow have the hope or promise or potential of supporting the evolution theory as opposed to denying the evolution theory, or they won't get the grant money.
I think that's ridiculous, Kent.
I think it's a fact of science.
No. If somebody discovered something with the human genome research, like compared to the chimp genome, for instance, and they discovered that there was something that was just untenable with evolutionary theory, that person would become very, very famous.
Well, you are dreaming.
I'm dreaming?
Yes, sir. Call Robert Gentry at halos.com, who published in major magazines all over the place. Everybody published his work on radiopolonium halos and granite. He's one of the world's experts on this radioactive disposal in granite rock and how it absorbs radioactive material, etc. Robert Gentry's work was published all over the place until somebody realized, you know, this proves the Big Bang Theory is wrong. The Earth was never hot, molten mass. They shut his grant money off like a spigot. Just go to halos.com and call Robert Gentry up in Powell, Tennessee, right near Knoxville, and ask him. He's a brilliant scientist, still does work on radiopolonium halos. But, boy, I tell you, the grant money was shut off immediately because it went against the evolution theory.
He's involved in a pretty hefty legal battle, too. For instance, some peer-reviewed public posting areas on the Internet have taken away his ability to post his material anymore, so now he's pushing to get his passwords and all that stuff back because of the bias that they have against him as being a creationist.
Or check out the story of Forrest Mims, who was a science writer for 60 different journals, including National Geographic, Nature, and others.
How do you spell it?
M-I-M-M-S, I think. I don't have it in front of me. Forrest, like Forrest Gump. Forrest Mims. He wrote for major journals, and he was denied a job of writer at Scientific American because he was a creationist. Even though the articles he would be writing had nothing to do with creation or evolution, he was just going to write on science topics, they said, no, we don't want a creationist on staff.
You look at also someone like Dean Kenyon, who authored one of the greatest, in support of evolution, when he was an evolutionist, he authored one of the greatest
textbooks for evolution on the biochemical predestination, showing how life could arise by itself when he was an evolutionist.
At San Francisco State University.
Then he later on came out and said, oh, wait a second. And that book was used all over the place as the common textbook. Later on he said, no, I'm wrong.
Well, look, we're really changing the subject, but let me make one comment about this before we go back to the original topic.
Well, the point is, if a person doesn't support the evolution theory, including in genetic research, they will lose their grant money or not be published or be ostracized. It has to support the evolution. There is a conspiracy out there, whether you want to admit it or not, just like there would be in the Soviet Union for a teacher to stand up 10 years ago and say, I don't believe in communism.
I think that your case would be made a lot stronger if you actually showed good evidence for that in your seminar series.
Well, watch my seminar part 7. The first 15 minutes, I go through case after case after case where people are criticized or lose their job. Let me call them up for you real quick.
Just real quick, write this name down for me, Jared. Dean Kenyon, D-E-A-N Kenyon. Investigate that and tell me why he was fired and then later rehired as a lab assistant.
Rehired
okay.
After.
I'll look into it. I've heard of it before. I'll look into it. Let me ask you one question.
Just study that out and then call in after you've read all about it and you have, I guess, your information on that. And tell us your views about it and why it happened and show us how it's not, discrimination by his beliefs.
First of all, even if that's true,
it
that
could be a small case.
Hovind's point in general.
No, I understand that. It could be a rare case. I understand that.
Exactly,
but just go ahead, for you specifically, check that out.
You're talking about a conspiracy on such a scale that it just boggles my mind. I mean, you're implying that every single scientific institution in the world has this policy.
Okay, how many different instances of mutability for discrimination would you require to think that maybe there is some type of hefty bias in the secular science world?
I would have to. Well, first of all, if you're saying that the scientific evidence points towards young Earth creationism,
I'm asking how
the evidence for it to be borne out all the time, and for these people to be showing this evidence all the time, and for them to be being ostracized all the time.
Hold on a second. That's not what I'm saying. First of all, we've always held the position that it's based on interpretation. People disagree with other people's interpretations. Facts don't speak for themselves in a lot of this science. So, first of all, how many different examples should we give you before you think? Or even entertain the idea that maybe there is a bias in the secular journals that will completely reject anything that could be interpreted as young Earth or something like that.
Oh, I want you to find a mammal skeleton like a squirrel.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. You're changing the subject now. How many instances would it take that I would have to give you for you to entertain the idea that maybe there is a strong bias in the filtering process here, that they will not accept something that could be interpreted as young Earth evidence?
I guess you'd have to take all the people that do this kind of research and then show me something significant, like,
So you're saying, for example, for me to convince you that there is a hefty bias in there, I have to go around and personally interview every one of these scientists and find something common amongst them all?
This is something that I haven't quite thought of, so let me get back to you on that, okay?
Okay.
But I want to give you two numbers to call, Jared, because
sure.
I really think you're sincere. And I really think you're going to end up getting on our side here before this is over with.
For the record, Jared is my favorite caller.
Okay. There we go. Jared, there was a science teacher in Burlington Edson High School near Seattle. His name is Roger DeHart, D-E, capital H-A-R-T.
Uh-huh.
He now lives in Los Angeles area. His phone number is 805-552-0332. 805-552-0332.
Got it.
He was a science teacher for years at this high school, and he started bringing in current science journals. Secular science journals to show the kids there are some errors in their textbook.
Uh-huh.
The textbook was teaching, the embryo has gill slits, and he was saying, here's this current science journal. No, it doesn't really have gill slits, blah, blah,
right.
blah. He was told he could not pass out current science journals to his students to expose errors in the textbooks. Okay?
Well, look, if the case is really as clear-cut as you just described it, then I would agree that that's pretty horrible.
Okay,
but
well,
really
call him up and ask him. Here's another one.
I will.
Kevin Haley, H-A-L-E-Y, at his phone number is 541-382-2278. 541-382-2278. He was a biology teacher at Central Oregon Community College in Bend, Oregon. He also was simply exposing errors in the textbooks, alerting his students, saying, hey, kids, this is not correct. It's been proven wrong now. It should not be in our book. They fired him.
Well, maybe he should have gone and talked to the committee that decided on curriculum first, you know?
Well, I talked to, let me see, I'll get the article here in front of me.
Well, anyway, that's enough for the...
There's one more you need ought to get here.
Okay.
I spoke at a school right near Mississippi University for Women. I was just north of there, 10 miles, but there's a lady who was the head of the department, I'll just read the article. During recent honors form at Mississippi University for Women, Dr. Nancy Bryson, B-R-Y-S-O-N, gave a presentation entitled Critical Thinking on Evolution, which conveyed alternative views to evolution, such as intelligent design. Bryson said that following the presentation, a senior professor of biology told her she was unqualified and not a professional biologist, and said her presentation was religion masquerading as science. The next day, Vice President of Academic Affairs, Dr. Vaughn Hansen, asked Bryson to resign from her position as head of the school's Division of Science and Math.
Yeah. Let me get to the comment I wanted to make before we get back on topic, and that was, how would you feel if an astronomy professor at a university decided to teach his students or her students that astrology was true and that the orbit of Neptune actually affected people's lives?
I think astrology...
Would you think they'd be qualified to stay on board as an astronomy professor?
Well, you have to be very careful. This road you're headed down leads to burning Galileo and guys at the stake, you know, for daring to expose the current science view. The current science view, historically, is frequently wrong and is very difficult to overturn the current paradigm. I mean,
but you're not answering my question, Ken.
Okay, well, I think you're not understanding your own question. That,
I understand my question perfectly.
Well, yes, if someone was teaching astrology, the worship of the stars, instead
of worship, I'm talking about the claim that the position of celestial bodies affects people's personal lives.
Okay, I do not believe they affect people's personal lives at all. I think it's ridiculous. Okay,
good. We agree. Now,
sure.
Do you think that the person that teaches that in an astronomy class should be able to stay on board and be, you know, seen as credible by the school?
I don't think that's any comparison to saying a person who challenges evolution or tries to correct textbooks should be fired just for saying, hey, kids, this book has got some outdated information. There's no comparison to your analogy
yeah,
here.
The difference there would be one guy affirming a position and a completely different case of somebody, disputing a position.
Well, I'm sure this astronomy professor could start bringing up articles that seem to...
I know that. Well, I think...
...about astronomy or whatever.
Honestly, this, in my personal opinion, the guy should be able to give his case. Should he be able to teach that as a fact? No. If he wants to tell his students, hey, it's my personal conviction that that star over there tells me how you're going to act tomorrow, well, okay.
Jonathan, if you can't see the danger in allowing a professor to do that, then I really can't help you.
Well, do professors share their personal opinions on things?
They do, but they're not allowed to say stuff like that.
No, I understand, I think they are allowed to say something like that. If they do, it still doesn't bother me. First of all, if they said that they think Neptune's swirling around, you know, up there in space and the way it swirls allows him to predict how every one of his students is going to behave, that's fine. His students can show him he's wrong by behaving completely contrary to what he's saying.
I think that what you're proposing is a complete violation of academic integrity.
If this
guy... Their whole system would fall apart people do that.
If this guy... Well, there are teachers that get up and blast God.
Should teachers be allowed to get up and say, Christianity is stupid, it's wrong, it's evil, and if you're a Christian, you're not going to graduate from my class?
Of course not.
They do it all the time.
Well,
me
personally, Jared.
In the context of a philosophy course, perhaps. But
no, they do it in biology as well, Jared. Me personally, if a teacher wants to say he doesn't believe in God and he thinks it's dumb too, that's fine. That's his position. If he wants to take a whole semester and teach that there is no God, or if he wants to take a whole semester and teach that, for instance, if I went to a public school and they taught that you have to be saved, by the blood of Christ to go to heaven, I would say, well, that's not for the science class, first of all. Yes, it's true,
that's
but
that's why people object to intelligent design, is because it's not science.
Well, intelligent design says nothing about the blood of Christ and how you need to be saved.
So,
oh, well, come on. It's tied into it directly. The same people are the
there
ones
are intelligent
that
design people who believe that, you know, we were put here by aliens.
He's saying this is wrong because the same people are involved. If you're going to say because the same people are involved in something, therefore everything they believe is wrong.
Guilty by association.
Guilty by association.
This no, it's not guilt by association. It's just widely recognized that intelligent design fanatics are the people that are trying to push
There are tons. We'll be back right after the break. You can join us here, folks. Dr. Dino Live. Get your questions in right away. Thanks a lot.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418. That's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio.
The Bible. What makes it so special? Answers with Ken Ham, one of North America's most popular Bible conference speakers. Well, Ken, the so-called holy books of the Hindus and Muslim religions are claimed by their followers to be inspired. So what do I say to people who say the Bible is just a book like those supposed holy books?
Well, holy means of divine origin. So it didn't originate from man, but from some divine being. But all three of the holy books you mentioned can't be true because they contradict each other. Now, the Bible makes a claim that Jesus is the only way, the truth, and the life, and that he died for our sins and was raised on the third day. Christ also said that no one comes to the Father except through believing in him, which contradicts every other holy book I know of. Many people think that all religions are the same, and so there are many paths to God. But it's very clear that Christianity is very different from all other religions. For one thing, Jesus Christ is a living Savior. After being raised from the dead, he appeared to over 500 eyewitnesses. The founders of all other religions are decaying in their tombs. In other words, we have the word of a living Messiah, Jesus Christ, our Creator, the Savior, Redeemer, Counselor, and King. The Bible stands alone when compared to other holy books. It's the only authentic and true holy book.
The Bible is the true history book of the entire universe. That's the theme of Ken's brand new booklet, The Seven Seas of History. It's available free on our website, AnswersRadio.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the final segment of today's Creation Science Hour and a Half, July 1st, 2005. Ken Hovind, Jonathan Sampson speaking to you live. And if you want to call in beyond the program, we'll be glad to take it. Now, Jared's on the phone. We're talking about is there discrimination, I guess, because someone believes in creation. And he said if an astronomy professor started teaching astrology or that the orbit of Neptune or something affects personalities, the person should probably be dismissed. And he's equating that to the fact that if someone teaches creation, they should be dismissed. Is that where we're going, Jared?
I wouldn't exactly equate it, but I'd say that they're pretty comparable. But I wanted to shift the topic back to Barney Maddox and this three nucleotide business.
Well, let me finish this first. But if you were the head of a biology department at a university at Dartmouth, where you work, or where you go to school,
both,
you would fire a creationist then, is that right?
I wouldn't fire a creationist unless they tried to start teaching things that were against the agreed-upon curriculum in the school.
Teaching things against the agreed-upon curriculum?
Yeah,
are you telling me
they vote on what the curriculum is going to be? They have committees and chairpersons.
Well, so what if they wanted to teach something that was against the agreed-upon curriculum but was still in perfect harmony with modern science?
Okay, I guarantee.
Give me an example of what you mean.
The whole Roger DeHart situation.
Yeah, he was exposing errors in the textbooks. So if the textbook is wrong, your teacher's not allowed to expose that? I mean, what is this?
No, of course, there's no reason not to allow that kind of thing. But I suspect that it's not as clear cut as you make it out to be. But I have not read about this yet, so I really can't comment.
Okay, so if a teacher gets up and mocks Christianity in class, which they do frequently,
it depends on what class it is.
In lots of classes, but it's not part of the curriculum in any class. Show me any class where it's part of the curriculum to mock Christianity. But they do it all the time. So here they are, departing from the agreed upon curriculum.
Is it okay to mock Greek mythology?
To mock mythology?
Yeah, if a teacher gets up and insults Zeus
Part of the curriculum? Can you show me a?
Does it matter? Answer the question.
Well, what class would it be part of the curriculum to mock anything? But they do mock things. So what class would it say? Okay, your homework today is write up a 10-page report on how to effectively mock Zeus and his thunder pants. I mean, I can't see that anywhere.
I'm thinking maybe a comparative religion class or like an ancient religion.
Well, comparing it is not mocking. I mean, if they want to say Allah's there, God's here, Jehovah's there, you know, Zeus is here, that's still not mocking.
Can you find me? I can show you classes where they mock Christianity. I don't think I can show you any classes where they mock Islam, because their faith Osama bin Laden is going to come blow up their house at 2 in the morning.
Oh, man. Let's talk about this another day, because I really wanted to talk about the Barney Maddox.
Okay, I'll tell you what, we will give you all the time for Barney, but I want to ask one more thought. I spoke in Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, I'm from Texas, actually. Did I ever tell you that?
No, that's great. I lived in Longview 5 years. You've lost your
accent. I grew up in Fort Worth. I lived there for 20 years.
Okay. Dr. Denny, D-I-N-I, teaches biology there. He had, for years on his website, if you come and want a recommendation letter from me to go on to medical school, I'm going to ask you the question, how do you think the human species originated? And basically, if you don't give an evolution answer, I'm not going to write a recommendation letter for you. You can't go to...
That's his prerogative.
Well, the federal government stepped in and said, no. This is clear discrimination. Students sued him for that position. The students in that school offered him $1,000 to debate me for 2 hours, and he refused.
Yeah, recommendation letters are a whole other game. I mean, they can pretty much do whatever they want with those.
So it's okay for a teacher to discriminate against a student, regardless of their GPA, just because they believe in creation.
I don't think that I would do that, but I'm just saying the professor, it's their choice.
I mean, I'm asking
the professor, you... I mean, he could easily have never said that out loud and still done it, and it would have been okay, just because nobody can criticize him for who he recommends.
So I asked you the question, is it okay that he does that? Do you think that's fair and just?
To go to medical school, he said?
Yeah. They go on from his biology class into medical school. And he says, if you don't believe in evolution, I'm not going to get you into medical school.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know how to answer that question. I'll think about it.
University of Texas, Lubbock. Check it out. I think it's something similar to that still on his website.
Yeah, I'll think about it.
Okay. Go ahead. Barney Maddox.
Let's think about, so this statement that he supposedly made about a nucleotide change being fatal to an organism?
Yes.
That's incredibly stupid. That is demonstrably false, and I can't believe that you would quote that.
Okay. Would you agree that...
It's incredibly dumb.
It's
demonstrably wrong.
Okay. Would you agree that when a person... What happens when a person gets one extra chromosome? What's that disease called?
Let's not... No. Don't distract me from the point.
Think
about all the alleles that we have for eye color and hair color.
Uh-huh.
These are mutations. Even under your worldview of Noah and his kids populating the Earth, they are allelic mutations of more than three nucleotides. So that whole thing that he said is wrong.
How many nucleotides can change? And is it possible that one nucleotide changes and is fatal? Is that possible?
Yeah, I talked to somebody about that earlier, and they said probably not because there's too much redundancy in the code. I don't know the answer to that, but the point is that you can definitely have more than three change, and it not be fatal, it not even be negative at all.
Well, there may be some nucleotides, just the change of one is fatal.
But there's still millions of other places on the genome where you can change it, and it doesn't do a single thing. Because there's junk DNA, for instance.
Non-coding
DNA, Jonathan.
Not coding for protein, but that doesn't mean it's junk.
Not junk DNA. A lot of it serves as decoys to draw away toxins and things.
Well, whatever you call it. I mean, are you going to... Okay, just respond to what I'm saying.
All I did was read the quote that I gave the reference. I have to look up the original source for that. but I think you're off track here. You're straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel.
You know, I love how you quote that out of context. You know who he was talking to when he said that?
Talking to the Pharisees.
That's right. I'm not a Pharisee, so quit using it against me, please.
Well, it applies.
No, it doesn't.
Okay. I think it does, but...
We're arguing about science here, Kent, and you're putting out bad science by saying three nucleotide changes are fatal to organisms.
You may be correct.
True.
I just simply quoted what he said. Now, you may be correct that he's not right, but I just quoted his... I just gave his quote. I don't know enough about it to know...
I don't even know why you would quote it, because you say all the time that mutations happen.
Sure. Can you name any beneficial mutations that have added information to the gene code?
Yes, I can, but that's not relevant to what I'm saying. I want you to admit that this is wrong.
I don't know that it's wrong. I told you I'd check it out. If you're right, then I'll change it. But I just
have you not said on the air and on your seminar tapes that mutations happen and that microevolution is accepted by creationists?
Mutations happen, but read the rest of my quote. They are negative. They're harmful, fatal, or neutral.
Whether or not they're harmful has nothing to do with whether or not they're fatal.
It has everything to do with the idea that mutations are going to cause an increase in genetic complexity and turn a rock to a human. It has everything to do with it.
How about the alleles for people's eye color and hair color?
I think they're great. My wife has green eyes. I have blue eyes.
And you realize it is mathematically provable that even under your conception of the origins of the human race, there must have been tons of mutations to change those since Noah's Ark.
Is that a mutation to change eye color?
Yes, because they are alleles.
Well, there, I don't know that that's true or not true. I can either confirm nor deny your
statement. There were eight people on the ark, right?
Correct.
How many different kinds of hair color and eye color do we have?
Probably three basic hair colors and a lot of combinations between those, blonde, brunette, and redhead. Eye color, I guess we have brown, blue, and green, and a few variations between those.
Which is just expressed by the amount of melanin being pumped out in your pigment cells.
Yeah, and how does that happen?
Well, I agree. It's by the allelic frequencies.
Exactly, and that happens by mutation.
So what was the original gene code of the pink one and blue one, that we evolved from?
That's irrelevant, Kent. You're trying to get me off track, and I'm trying to pin you down on this and show you that you're wrong.
I'm trying to help you see how dumb your position is, Jared. We love you. We want to help you. But to believe we all came from rocks is silly.
Kent, what if I told you that I believe in God and that I don't believe that we all came from abiogenesis, and I still disagree with your entire theory?
Or do you believe we came from an ape-like ancestor? Let's give you at least up that far, to primates.
I think it's the best theory we have, yeah.
Okay. Well, you're welcome to believe that, but there's no scientific evidence for it.
No, I already gave you at least one or two pieces of evidence for that specific claim.
You think there are some one or two pieces of evidence that would hold up to scrutiny for the claim that we have ape-like ancestors in our past?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's another long discussion we could get into. Okay.
Sure. Okay, so I want you to look into this thing about the nucleotide changes.
Sure, yeah, I will.
It's extremely important, and you use this all the time, and I think that it's totally wrong.
Okay. Chromosome number 14 in the human genome was mapped by a French and Italian and English and American team, and they found 87 million, I believe is the number, nucleotides in that one chromosome. That's just one chromosome. We have 46 of them, okay? This incredible DNA code that we have, can you name any instances where we can have, we may have mutations that cause this code to corrupt. That happens in computers all the time, where a certain function no longer works.
Right.
You know, spell check doesn't work anymore, they're corrupted, okay? Especially in the early days of computers, it was much more common, okay? Now, just about every week I have to click on, you know, click here for updates to patch something. Okay.
Microsoft is a terrible company, but that's...
Thousands and thousands of patches have to be made because there's goofs in the code, okay?
Yep.
And this is a bunch of intelligent people, I'm assuming, that are writing this code. Mm-hmm. And yet you think the human gene code, which is a billion times more complex than Microsoft, any code, or all codes together, happened by chance. I don't understand how you can believe that.
When you say that it happens by chance, that's not entirely correct. Do you know what a Markov chain is?
No, sir.
Okay, a Markov process is a process where you have an input. In this case, it would be like a genome, like with a bunch of nucleotides.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a random, there are probabilities assigned to changes that change the state. So, you know, a certain nucleotide could change the amino acids. There's probabilities attached to it, and it only depends on the input, not what happened before it, right? So every time that someone gives birth, conceives, that you're seeing it as this random process. But it's not just a random process. There are other factors that are controlling this. It's kind of like saying that the weather is all based on chance. Well, that's not entirely true. The weather is somewhat random, but it also adheres to laws.
Before it hits the filter, is it random?
What do you mean before it hits the filter? Before natural selection?
Natural selection is not random. It's going to act on the environmental influences. But before that, is it random? Before the raw material, before natural selection, how is that gathered?
The only random part that biologists are claiming is the mutation.
Exactly. So it's all based on randomness.
It's heavily involved with randomness. That's part of the thesis.
It all starts, where does it all start with? If we want changes to occur, what's the first thing we need?
I'm not understanding your question.
If we need a change in the genome to occur, what is the first thing we need?
Are you looking at this from a naturalist perspective on the history, or?
Well, you need a mutation, right?
Yeah.
Okay, is the mutation random?
That's the current theory, yeah.
Okay, so it's all initiated by randomness.
The changes that happen
once it gets to that filter
are random.
Once it gets to that filter, like you're just discussing in programming, I mean, once we get to an if statement in PHP or C or Java or anything like that, then it's no longer random because we have things, computing this process right here, computing this information. But before that, the raw information is not, well, in computer programming it is, but naturally, whenever you have multifactorial traits and environmental effects, it's random until you get to that filtering process. It is based on randomness, then.
It's based on randomness in the sense that that's where the data partly comes from. But the whole process as a whole is not a random process. It's not like a Brownian motion scenario where it's just like walking around randomly.
I always picture a brownie actually in motion when I hear that.
Brownie in motion. That's
like this little brown thing with
dispersion in gases or fluids. I suppose technically solids too, but that'd be a real slow process. So your point is, my point is, yes, we have mutations. Yes, things go wrong in the gene code. Code gets corrupted. But there are no examples where the changing random processes in the code improves it. So call in tomorrow, Jared. We'll be back. Thanks, folks, for joining us. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Something in my hand that I think you should own, and I'm not going to try to tell you that you don't already have it, but you, I am confident, do not have it all in one piece like you would if you owned a copy of the Citizen's Rulebook. Do you have a copy? Well, this is in your shirt pocket, full force research at your fingertips, having to do with how to behave as a juror, the Constitution itself, the resources in here are just tremendous. And I'll be glad to send you a copy of this if you'll send me enough for postage plus a dollar. Whatever you want to contribute to Truth Radio, I'll send you a copy of the Citizen's Rulebook. Just get back to me at Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444, and it will be coming your way.
Okay, Frank, we're 10,000 feet in the air. Why did you bring me here?
Well, you're always saying that trying to get into heaven without trusting the sacrifice Jesus made is like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute.
Yeah, God is holy. You know you've sinned. Jesus paid the penalty for your sin. If you don't accept that payment by trusting Jesus, when you die, it will be like jumping out of a plane without a parachute.
Wrong! Instead of using a parachute, I set up a trampoline in my backyard.
Frank, you're taking this analogy way too seriously.
Well, I can get into heaven by being good. I don't need Jesus. Man, that's a long ways down.
I thought you were going to jump.
Are you kidding? Without a parachute?
Well, I'm glad you realized that before you jumped. Now, about Jesus.
You know there's a God. You know you've sinned. What will it take for you to stop trusting your good deeds and start trusting Jesus? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
Thanks for listening to www.